Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Swung it and lined to deep left field. It is gone! Hit well. Deep right. Batista's going to wave goodbye. Start the fireworks show.
This is the official Covering the Corner podcast, episode 190. I am your host, Matt Lyons, and this week's episode, we'll have some meatballs for you, some tidbits of stuff the Cleveland Guardians did last week. Talk about the fact that it's Memorial Day. What are the Guardians at this point? This is kind of the marker where we'll determine. Kind of get a feel for what your team is. Talk about, is Josh Naylor good? Is Franmil Reyes bad? Shane Bieber fixed? Is Andrés Giménez the best shortstop that has ever played in Cleveland? Talk about all that and more. Another Mr. Merritt Rolfing. Merritt, how you doing?
I'm great, Matt. How are you?
Not too bad, Merritt. Pretty good.
It's good.
Watching, not watching a ton of baseball because they keep getting rained out, but there's baseball
just,
on, yeah.
Yeah, we don't play baseball anymore. It's been great. Yeah. You play once every
4 days.
It's more of an idea, really, now at this point. It's something to think about as a concept more than a real thing.
Do you get the feeling like this year they've canceled a lot more earlier than in the past? I don't know if that's just a recency bias thing, but it feels like they're just calling it now before people get in the stadium a lot more than before. Or are these stores just really bad? I don't really know.
I mean, it does seem that way. I feel like I've been like not even like left work yet, and it's like game, or it's like 2 o'clock for a 7 o'clock game. It's like game's canceled. Maybe this is just we're getting better at weather predictions, with science. Maybe it's weather is becoming more unpredictable and the storms are stronger because of a certain reason. maybe, I don't know. Yeah, maybe they're just like, they don't want people to come down and, you know, waste their time or whatever. But because they canceled again on Saturday, I think, like that, something like that.
Yeah. And I mean, the one on Thursday was moved to Friday or whatever and ruined their off day. Or Wednesday to Thursday, I think it was, but one of those.
I'm just glad they don't play in a dome still. Like I know this would fix everything, but I generally think dome stadiums are bad for baseball, for football too. Football is stupid in a dome. Like, what are we doing here?
Even the convertible ones, I don't like that much. Like, you can tell there's a dome on top. I like the wide openness of like Progressive Field and PNC Park and all that.
The only one I really don't mind too much is the one in Seattle because it doesn't have walls, so it still is like miserable. It's like miserable and damp. It's like playing in a basement.
It's still moist in there all the time.
It's like if you're up in the last row, you're just getting wind and rain blown at you. I'm wearing a tarp. What do you wear? What's the thing you wear? A raincoat. That's the word I'm looking for.
Poncho?
Poncho is actually the word I was trying to remember and I could not remember. Thank you very much.
Rain sock? Body?
A slicker?
A rainy boy? I believe it's called a rainy boy.
I believe it's called a rainy boy.
You know what else is called a rainy boy, Matt?
I do, Matt. Me. Oh, wait. This is a segue.
If the soundboard was working, this is where the meatball sound would come in. I'm just going to add it in later.
But
it's meatballs, Merritt. That's what that thing I just said. This, of course, we talk about little things in the past week of Guardians baseball. Instead of going over every little thing, we just pick out a couple specific things that stuck out to us. Although I guess saying that, I realize mine is cheating, but I know you have two, so you go first.
With
what
rich
that you have.
I'm rich with delicious meatballs. Going to make a big old meatball sandwich on Sunday. Shane Bieber pitched, struck out 10, allowed 2 runs. Well, 3 runs, 2 earned, 6 hits over 7 innings. On that day, he threw the 7th most sliders by percentage he's thrown ever in a single baseball game, which by itself is interesting, but not too remarkable. However, of those 7, all but 1 have come this year, which I also found to be surprising. And I dug a little deeper, and that 1 that didn't come this year was also a loss, much like most of the ones where he's been throwing a ton of sliders this year. Like, for instance, on what was it, April 20th, 2022, he threw 47.7% of his pitches were sliders. That was a loss. He struck out none. He struck out two and still lost the game. 3-0, which isn't really his fault, I suppose. On the 7th, 49.3% of his pitches, sliders. He lost that game. He struck out none, went 3.1 innings. And then if we go back to 2019, when he threw a ton of sliders on the 15th of September, I believe that was a loss as well. Basically, what I'm talking about here, he won that game, actually. A lot of times when Shane Bieber can't get outs, he tries to go to the slider, it doesn't work, and it just gets worse and worse and worse. And now that he can't throw a pitch hard, it just gets worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. In fact, he's throwing 41% of his pitches at the slider this year. The fact that he can't throw it for a strike consistently is a problem. But anyway, Shane Bieber, lots of sliders. If you see too many, usually means a loss is pending. And he's less great than he used to be. It's kind of sad. Anyway, that's my first meatball.
Even after striking, we'll talk about more later, but I don't think the 10 strikeouts immediately means he's back. But that's kind of interesting.
It's a shitty
the coal mine thing.
But. Sorry for cussing, but yeah.
Cussing on the podcast, man?
I apologize.
It's just kind of like you see sliders, he's probably not doing so good, which makes sense.
I think if you're seeing him throw 30% sliders, that then we're feeling pretty good. The fact that he's not throwing his cutter nearly at all this year, like that was a good, he's thrown 7 all year. That was supposed to be like the next pitch that like, that was the elevating, like that the pitch is going to lift him into a tool. I think in 2020, he threw a ton of those. Changeups, he's thrown 16 changeups all year. Like all he's throwing out is sliders and fastballs. It's like he's turned into a glorified relief pitcher, and he only throws 91. That's worse and worse.
Because I never thought of him as like a fastball power pitcher, but always a pitcher that plays off his fastball. So when it's like just that and one other pitch, it's not our Shane Bieber, our Bieber boy. At some point, I'm kind of wondering if it's the sticky stuff that he misses, because it was. I mean, if we're gonna call out like Garrett Cole and James Karinchak for that kind of thing, like. The timing of Shane Bieber slowly declining, apparently, is kind of times in well with the ban on sticky stuff. So,
I mean, you also have to look. I mean, the thing that, to your point, right, what really made him amazing was his pinpoint control. So you could dot the corner with his. I mean, when he was at his best, it was always just dazzling. When he would just go beep beep beep, and right. just like throw the perfect pitch constantly, and then you throw the slider off that or like whatever the slurve, whatever sweeper he has. But like in 2020, when he had that dazzling, quarter season, the one-third of a season. Throwing 94 miles an hour in 2021, 93 this year, 91. I mean, yes, I think the sticky stuff could have something to do with it. I think it's affected a lot of people, but the fact that he just doesn't throw hard anymore, like, or even like a league average fastball anymore, right?
That's the
real problem. Like we always talk about him being just like the perfect Josh Tomlin because he could at least throw the ball at league average league average velocity. This is. We're entering normal Josh Tomlin mode at this point. He still has a dirty curve or dirty slider, whatever you want to call that thing. But it's not working. It's not working at all. He's been very bad.
So my meatball is sort of the opposite, I guess. Is things working well for the Guardians, things they do well. I don't know if he's talked about pitch value on the podcast before, but it's one of my favorite weird little things. So I also like WPA, which is kind of like we always searching for context neutral. This is like all context. You just want to know. Like for pitch value, it's what happened, the run expectancy before and after a pitch, essentially. So like if it's a 2-0 pitch and you have like X percent odds of getting a hit after the pitch, you have X plus or minus, whatever, based on the pitch. So just basically looking at, each individual pitch and how it affected the chances of the other team scoring. So obviously if it's higher for a pitcher, that's better because you're lowering the chances. And if it's a batter, I think they both measure out higher when they're doing the ratings, like it's a higher for batter and higher for pitcher. But so basically I just wanted to look at just the weirdness of the Guardians and how they are against pitches. So when you think of the Guardians, I don't know if you're like me, but I usually think of them as like hitting a fastball and everything else is terrible because they can't hit off speed. But do you want to take a shot at guessing which pitch they're best at based on weighted pitch value?
Curveball.
Slider. And they're by far the best in the league. Like it is also both by just raw numbers and also averaging it out per pitch. So just by the weighted slider value, they're 15.2. The next closest is the Yankees at 9.7. This team just weirdly apparently crushes sliders or hits them at the opportune times. And the more interesting thing about that, too, is the best guys at it are the ones we're going to talk about today, is the guys that we don't know what they were, and they're suddenly looking like real players. It's like Josh Naylor, Owen Miller, Andres Jimenez, Ernie Clement, and then Jose Ramirez are the five best guardians at hitting the slider based on the run expectancy before and after the pitch. Some of them might hit it better, but that's just based on this one stat. And then like Josh Naylor in particular, I mean, he just absolutely crushes them. He had a 118 or 1.182 OPS against sliders this year so far. So whatever the hell he's doing is working. I don't know if, again, we're just going to be, it's going to be going back to, is this a new batting coach kind of thing? Or is it just new players coming up and seeing pitches and they're recognizing sliders really well? But it's just kind of interesting that the Guardians are really good at hitting sliders. And as a secondary to weird pitches that the Guardians are good with, Sam Hetges apparently has the best fastball on the Guardians based on pitch values, which part of that, I think, is the situation he'd be coming in. Exactly. Compared to last year when it was just a rope that just got hit every time. It was the worst, yeah.
I was going to say, your point on the sliders thing, it makes me think back to, was it 20, when did he get married? 2017, I guess, when they played the Yankees in the playoffs, right? And they lost that series. They were known to be like the best fastball hitting team in the league.
And they saw all off-speed pitches.
Well, and the thing they couldn't hit very well was sliders. And I can't remember who it was, but I do remember the Yankees were very good at throwing. It's like they were the best slider throwing team in baseball. And the only player that was good against the slider was Edwin Encarnacion. And he hurt his ankle rounding second in like the first game and missed the rest of the series. And I'm not saying that's the only thing that doomed them ultimately, but like, I just remember that having like, darn it. So yeah, just, it's interesting, this sea change, I guess, you know, there where they saw a problem and now hopefully they've been overcorrected and got guys who can only hit sliders, but like, we're going to get the guys like Owen Miller, who can, I think get around really nice on a high fastball too. But anyway, to your point about Hetges, sorry.
I don't know. That's a good point. No, that was on Hetges. Just the fact that, what the hell, he throws a fastball really good now, apparently. And he is also good now, which I think as far as our preseason predictions, the fact that Sam Hetges is an ace out of the bullpen somehow right now is not
something we saw coming. He was left off any predictions we had, quite honestly. Like,
he was just not worth talking about. That's
I was like, he's bad. Don't worry about him.
He's not a factor. It's fine. Yeah. But now he's out there slinging a four-seamer, slider, curveball, sinker, and he just looks amazing out of the bullpen. And I don't get it, but I'm good with that as long as it works. So what's your second meatball, which is going to curtail into our other ones?
In between the years of 2017 to 2021, Javier Baez hit 271, 312, 503. This year, Andres Jimenez is hitting 301, 324, 515. In 2018, Javier Baez's outs above average was in the 91st percentile. In 2019, oddly enough, it was in the 100th percentile. Best defender in baseball up there. In this year, 2022, Andres Jimenez's outs above average is in the 98th percentile. Now, I'm not going to sit here and say that they're the same player, because that same year that Javier Baez was great in so many ways, he also had an 88th percentile barrel percentage and a 3 percentile whiff percentage. Those are 37 and 50% respectively for Jimenez. But you know what? Also, one bat's left, one bat's right, but who cares? They both play shortstop. All I'm saying is there is an approach to these two that is very, you know, similar. 11th percentile walk rate in, say, 2019, just pick a year for Baez. 2nd percentile for Jimenez this year. The boy's up there to swing. He loves to chase. He does not strike out as much as Baez does. He has a higher expected batting average. He has a lower max exit velocity, but he's also like 2 years younger than Baez was at his best in his peak year. So I know last year was a tough year for Andres Jimenez. I like what I see so far. I wrote around a couple weeks ago. I did not bring up the Baez comp. I think, at least in a results situation, we're starting to watch some happen here. Obviously, with how the percentages and how the kind of process stats, as it were, are panning out. But not everyone has to be the walk, you know, 10 or 15% walk rate, high average guy. Some guys just want to hit the ball real hard and create great wins and be incredibly fast, you know, 96th percentile in sprint speed. Dangerous young man, and honestly, one of the many pleasant surprises, I think, in 2022. I love watching him play, and also if you go on to Baseball Reference and you mouse over his headshots, his old headshot, no smile. His current headshot, big smile. So.
It's the opposite of what usually happens in those
guys. I know. He usually gets grumpier and grumpier. Yeah. Now he's a happy guy. Look at this happy little guy over here.
Yeah, happy little fella. Yeah, any game where he is not at shortstop should be a crime at this point, punishable at the full extent of the law. I have no idea why. I mean, I don't care what you're going to do with Amed Rosario. Figure out something else. Just don't put him at shortstop.
I don't mind his bat in the lineup. I mean, we're going to get to guys like Kwan soon, where he's probably worked his way out of the lineup as it is. So there's still space for someone like Rosario. But at this point, Jimenez, the left side of the infield should be Jimenez and Ramirez.
Yeah, and I think Owen Miller should be the future there at some point. I think he's really smooth. Like that Jimenez and Owen Miller up the middle is like the... At least defensively and smoothness-wise, it's like the Jimenez or Ramirez-Lindor combo we never got on defense almost.
Yeah, no, it's...
Because I think Jimenez can be that good on defense, like Lindor levels of...
No, I mean, by the numbers, he is at least going to ask above average. He is as good as Francisco Lindor... was ever like, and Lindor has fallen off some. He's gotten a little bit older, you know, Jimenez being 23, and that's the best part. Like, he's 23 years old and I'm sorry, but basically just as good as Francisco Lindor.
I mean, since the trade, yeah.
That feels really weird, especially since the trade. Like,
yeah,
the thing, we all, some of us use Twitter too much. Whatever, who cares? but I remember I saw one post. I follow a lot of Mets fans for some reason. Anyway, I don't know how it happened. I know exactly how it happened. I don't want to get into it. But like, one guy just like, Francisco Lindor's greatest talent has been convincing the world that he's a superstar. And I was like, damn, like, what the hell, dude? Like,
are they not happy with him over there anymore? I don't know.
Have you looked at his batting lines, dude? He has been bad.
Yeah,
like,
he's not good.
I mean, he is the most, like, he is, listen, I know, Steve Cohen has more money than God, but, like, he's been not good at all. Like, yeah. There's no, like, fancy or, like, cute way to say it. And the fact is, they're still so far in the lead. Like, they're just walking away with that division already. And he is he's not bad, I guess, but he's, what, a 111 OPS plus. His slug percentage is 387.
And what's
OPS
his RBAT, Merritt?
No, I'll tell you right now, man.
Oh, thank you.
Well, thank you for asking. What a kind question that was. 118.
Thank you very much.
I know that just in general offense is down, so, like, having a 722 OPS feature of 11% better than average, but like his last 2 years have just been so bad. He is in 2 years with the Mets, he's 233, 326, 405.
I mean, the trade is not looking too bad right now. I still don't know if I'm fully in on Jimenez being this forever. I mean, defensively, I'm all in. He's a great shortstop. I don't think I'm going to change that. I just don't know how much this bat is going to last forever, but it's lasting for now, and that's fun.
I mean, you're right. 345 BABIP. I mean, yeah, you know, but like to go back to the
completely unsustainable.
Well, speed, you know, again, yeah. he hits the ball hard. You know, he hits the ball pretty hard. Not like super hard. He's not like a 90th percentile guy, but he's very fast. And you know, makes his own luck. I don't want him to be batting second or third, like where Baez was at his peak in the Cubs lineup.
Yeah.
But like, again. I talk about this all the time, the kind of player that helps a team win championships, because he's hitting seventh, he's hitting eighth, right? He's causing havoc in the back end of the lineup and like setting tables while also playing elite defense and having guys emerging or sitting there as superstars hitting, you know, 2 through 5, as we'll get to in a few minutes. I mean, honestly, if the 8-9, it's like the 7-8-9, like consistently were him and Rosario, and then I guess one of the catchers. Ugh. honestly, I would almost say bat the catcher eighth or something like that. But yeah, no, it's been a pleasant surprise. And like you said, I don't think he'll be this good. He's I think, you know, he can be like a 3 or 4 win player. But again, we're talking about growth. We're talking about a guy who can get better and better and better every year, and he has. His hard hit rate has gone up 30% last year, 40% this year. His line drive rate is up. His ground ball rate is down. His fly ball rate is up. He's pulling the ball. The fact that he's pulling the ball more, and then next year they can't shift on him anymore, Like, I don't know, man. I'm in. It's I'm gonna fully be in.
It's that fun, slap happy guy that we've wanted for so long. Now you have like a million of them, which is fun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
the no walk, just make contact kind of guys.
Yeah, it's a total hoot, and you have guys like Stephen Kwan, who's you know, whatever. Stephen Kwan is literally the player I just made in MLB The Show, where I decided I'm only ever going to hit the contact swing. Like, I'm going to boost contact all the way up, no power. And so I go like 3 for 4 every single game, all single. It is awful. It is really boring, but you know, what are you going to do?
And as I mentioned in the intro part, like, this is, I don't, there's like no official thing, but like Momura does the old saying, like, this is where you can sort of gauge what your team is. So we figured this episode, this is kind of just where we'll gauge what the Guardians are. They're 17-20, a really rough weekend against some really bad teams. Reds are the worst in baseball. The Tigers are not great. If a playoff run does happen at this point, it's going to be a lot like, the playoff run didn't happen, but like 2019, where they chased down the Twins until the middle of the season. That was really fun until that all collapsed. But I wouldn't mind seeing that happen again with this team. Like, they're going to get hot again. That's just what they do. They're a young and consistent team. But I don't know. They're away from the playoffs, I think, unless something big happens. But it's just all these players. We just don't know what they are. We're watching them sort of maybe solidify into something. Like, we already talked about Andrés Giménez. He's clearly great on defense, maybe pretty good on offense.
Streaky would be the word. Streaky. You know, there'll be black holes, but there will be positives
and
as well.
With the whole team, yeah. Pretty much everybody. And then, of course, there's Josh Naylor, who is the best player in baseball. I feel like every week we've had a different best player in baseball. It was Stephen Kwan to start the year. Owen Miller for a little while. Josh Naylor now.
But the real question is he really this good? Oh, I don't know. Maybe.
Did you scream, get hit by a ball and then scream and laugh about it afterwards? I would be terrified to pitch to this man. There's nothing you can do to intimidate him.
He's just a tough old meatball, and I love everything about him. The growth he's showing, in like, oh, again, 50% hard hit rate, like ground ball rate is a career low, fly ball rate career high, line drive rate career high,
home he's run not rate striking out a whole lot. Absurd, it's not career low, but it's still good.
Again, always been a big contact guy. Like, that's one of the things that he was. He was a higher than average. I mean, the walk rate has never been great, but like, if he can get that up, you know, more, obviously, that'll help as the BABIP falls. And I think it will. And he hit that home run on, what was it, Sunday? I mean, you look at, all right, so he's only played 21 games, 81 plate appearances. He's lagging behind everyone else by 40 plate appearances, whatever you want to call it. He's already got 6 home runs. He doesn't lead the team, but he's up there. And like, all of them are everywhere. I think this is my favorite part, was if you like chart those home run balls, they're all over the zone. Like, he has complete zone coverage as far as total power. And, I mean, again, new pitching, new hitting coach, question mark? I mean, this is a guy who was rehabbing also since, like most of last year. He got hurt, in June? And now he's back hitting 350 with 1,000 OPS? Like, I don't think that'll hold. But if he finishes the season with an 850 or 900 OPS, I would be unsurprised, quite honestly, Matt. Unsurprised.
Oh yeah, it was just a one season thing. Like, he looks so good this season. I don't think there's anybody I've ever wanted to be as good as I want Josh Naylor to be. Just based on everything about him.
I love it. I mean, he's...
that walk off he hit. I don't think we've had an episode since then. But when he did that, and then was screaming in the dugout, everybody's pumped for him. Like, imagine this guy deep in the playoffs. That is going to be insane.
He is the perfect player for the playoffs. I mean, we saw what he did the last time he got to play in the playoffs.
Oh yeah,
he beat the piss out of the Yankees.
Like, I forgot about that.
He was incredible. And we're just like, what is happening? Did we just get Reggie Jackson Jr.? Like, this is absurd. But he's mad at the Yankees because whatever, who cares? But yeah, no, like, there's a certain type of player who is both built for the postseason and cannot always cut it in the long season because they're just so intense.
Yeah,
and I think this is the thing that happens, and like, I think it's more of a, maybe he'll break down over time, or he'll just go crazy, who knows, but like, when he's fired up, man, like,
oh yeah,
if this team can get like legit good and get like into like a playoff battle, I think that would be when he'd be at his best. If like, they're not like great, but they're like a 90-win team fighting against other teams to get somewhere, and it's like a division rival, and like, I would love for him to just be a guy like, he hits like 450 against the Central, like, for his career.
You are not going to be moping in the dugout when he is around you.
No, he'll be like, you will be in the game, and like, oh man. pay this man already. I don't know. I'm obviously enraptured, but I mean, and we've all been big nail heads for over a year now, but this is just, I don't know.
It's more than I thought he was going to be coming back.
Yeah. I figured he was going to just kind of slowly work his way back and not be the best hitter in the lineup. I didn't think
it'd be like Mike Trout for a couple weeks, but you know, that's what it is.
It is bonkers, man. Like he is, I don't know. He's second in RBIs and he's played half as many games as number one guy. He's second in home runs. I mean, how many doubles does he have? Nah, he's not that high. Oh no, he's got a lot of doubles. Jesus.
Yeah, I wouldn't consider Josh Naylor a doubles runner.
Really. No. He's not a hustle double boy. That's for
darn. Oh, he's a hustle. He's the hustle. Not quite make it double though.
So he's seventh in hits and second in home runs. Like that's so cool. Like my God, what a boss player. Like in every stretch, in every sense.
I mean, even if he evens out to like just a pretty decent offensive player. I think he's only 24, but he's like the Mike Napoli guy they've been searching for forever. He's not as old, obviously, but like he's the big personality guy that's going to bring everybody, which I think is going to count for something when you're in the playoffs and need intensity and you're going to have him getting hit by baseballs and screaming and laughing about it as he's on for his base.
And like, that's the thing. I think he can be a high average hitter, like career, just because of the plate coverage. I think they have pretty good discipline. Like he doesn't walk a ton this year. He's not walking a ton this year, but like he's not, again, not swinging, missing. It's kind of like a poor man's version of, I don't know, like Judge or I think Aaron Judge actually is a perfect example of this. Is someone who doesn't strike out he does strike out a ton, but you know, someone who just has such power that even mistakes can turn into hits because they're hitting the ball so hard. It's players like that. That's the perfect modern player that he just kind of creates hits out of nowhere. And again, he hits some bombs, man. He hits the ball so hard. It's so cool. God, he's so cool.
Hey man, get this optimism garbage out of here. We need to talk about the fact that somebody broke Franmil Reyes, and we need to find him and bring back his soul, apparently, which has been snatched Space Jam style.
I think we need to figure out a cool nickname, like Big Sweetie for him or something.
Big Sweetie is a lot better than Franny.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, Big Honey is already taken, isn't it?
I don't know, is it?
I just typed Frank for Franmil Reyes. Frank, yeah. I love how unique his name is. It's awesome.
Oh, it's awesome. Franimal. That's the real nickname.
I mean, that's the thing about him, too. He's broken right now. And yet, like I was talking about with Jimenez, I mean, I was like, ignore these numbers, but actually pay attention to these ones. Like, average exit velocity, 99th percentile. Max exit velocity, 80th percentile. Hard hit, 97. Barrel, 94. Like, has a man ever been as unlucky as poor, sweet, big...
big... handsome
something Frank.
Big
Frank. Big Frank. No, that's already been taken several different big hot times.
Dog is like a Frank.
It's true. Yeah. My old pile. I always refer to whenever I see a big dog as a pile of hot dogs. Like when I see a big fat brown lab, it's like, look at that big old pile of hot dogs. That's what he is. He's like a big old pile of hot dogs.
There you go. I guess unlucky is probably more accurate than
shockingly unlucky.
Broken. Like, it's unbelievable.
I don't know. If you look at his, you know, they have their expected WOBA on Baseball Savant, and it's just his past 50. It looks like the reverse of a Bored Ape NFT value, something like that. It's just going straight up almost. It's look at that. It's tiny.
It was the opposite of an NFT. There you go. Big NFT is what we'll call him.
Yeah. Big NFT. I hope not. Good Lord.
But it's weird too. It's not like he's just pulling the ball and getting shifted on. It's still going all over when he manages to get it out. But it's right to everybody, and he's striking out way too much. Which is, I mean, you can be unlucky and still be an average hitter if you're hitting this hard. But if you're striking out the most in baseball,
like it is stunning,
and whiffing on almost everything.
Bottom 1% in strikeouts, top 3% in hard hit rate.
Like, that's got to be the biggest disparity, right? Ever.
That is truly. So exit velocity 94.7 on average, top one, bottom one for. Listen, the man, the phrase "grip it and rip it" has always been bandied about, but this dude is just closing his eyes, swinging as hard as he can, going, "Well, there you go. What can you do?"
There you go. It's a Rick Manning.
There you go. Like, I guess. Let me ask you something. That guy strikes out 40% of the time. What? Give me a batting line where you'd be okay with that. Otherwise, like numbers or something. Just throw some numbers out at me here.
I mean, every other hit has to be a home run. So whatever that slugging percentage is, the few times you make contact, it better be gone. You can't be slashing 198, 255, 278, though.
I would say that if a guy is striking out 40% of the time, I would want from him otherwise would be 100 extra base hits.
Yeah.
That's it. I mean, Albert Bell, 50-50. He also hit like 380 or something like that. You know? So, that's about the number. So you strike out 40% of the time. You have 600 at-bats. That's 240 strikeouts. Good Christ. Actually, you know what? Honestly, not too stunning. Seen it done before. So then you have another 300 and – no, you have another 260 at-bats to play with. You get 100 extra base hits. And you have 100 – sorry, everyone who hates math, but this is a baseball podcast. And then you have another 160 at-bats. You walk 60 times. So that's 100 50 more singles and 50 more outs in the field. How's that sound? Something I just gave a guy 150 hits. Like, what do you think of that, Matt? That'd be pretty good. I take that, I think. I don't know.
If you're striking out 40% of the time, anything that's not terrible is going to be decent enough. But
God, what was that?
I mean, if he was walking more, it'd be all right. But he's also not a big walking guy. So he's not even three truth or outcome. He's just strikeout or hit it to an outfielder is basically what he's been.
Mark Reynolds, basically. What we have here is a Mark Reynolds is what we've built here. Which, again, always a big Mark Reynolds fan. Never had to have him on my favorite. Actually, yeah, we did.
He was on, yeah. I was really excited when he came to Cleveland.
Good Lord, he was on Cleveland. Oh, yeah, man. When they were just churning through meatballs. Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, I think that was his bad time. But I was excited when he came here because I was like...
We all were. Yeah, sure. Yeah. That was when we were also excited about guys like Casey Kochman. Sure, yeah.
God, yeah.
Want to take a tour to the early 2010s?
I do not. That's
corner infielders.
The only one I want to talk about there is, oh my God, I forgot his name. The outfielder, Shin-Soo Choo. That's the only one I care about.
Who was that big idiot in the outfield? There were so many of them. Shelly Duncan.
Yeah.
Or who's the other one?
Jerry Sands.
Jerry Sands is what I was trying to think.
He was a legend for a week. That's good stuff.
We loved him. And he went to like Japan or something.
Oh, yeah, and he's a star over there. Yeah, he's awesome over there.
What a cool man. If I could pick anything to be, it would be a failed professional athlete in America and then go to, like, do something like him or like Stephon Marbury did. I mean, he wasn't a failed player. He made a lot of money here, and then he went over there and got a statue for himself. So, what a dream. Where were we?
Who's next? Fernando Reyes, not great. Probably not great. Stephen Kwan, I think I said this exact thing when we talked about how good he was early in the season. Like, the fact that he's not hitting well recently, but he's still drawing walks. He has, like... I mean, he's hit once in his last four games, but he's still drawn three walks. So, like,
not great.
Yeah. But he can also recover eventually and keep hitting a couple times. Like, he has enough skill, enough tools that he can still be effective when his hit tool isn't on par. So, I'm not extremely worried about him. I think he's a rookie and he's going to dip and he's in a dip and he will continue to walk and play good defense and work out of it and eventually hit. Probably not be the best hitter in baseball like he was at the beginning of the season. He might whiff a couple times, but he's going to be, I still think, a solid right fielder for the Guardians going forward.
Mike Petriello tweeted this exact thing today, actually. He tweets a ton, so I'm trying to find the exact thing. Since getting eight hits in the opening series, he's hitting something like, he's hitting .211, .313, .305. So that's not great, obviously.
Not great, yeah.
I mean, you know, the thing is, he has great contact. He doesn't hit the ball very hard.
Yeah.
It's just, he's also not an elite speed guy, really. He's okay defensively. But like you said, like, this is not, he's not a finished product. I think there's certainly interesting building blocks there. I think the fact that his ground ball rate, I think his ground ball is just a little too high. It's stupid. This is an impossible thing for me to say, because it's an impossible thing to do. But he should hit more line drives. He should develop more of a line drive.
Has he considered hitting the ball lately?
and that's the thing, you know. It's too many ground balls, and I think it's too many. I think if he had a league average line drive rate, he'd probably be doing a little bit better. He's still
way better. He doesn't for the out league.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, for the year, the numbers look better than they actually are.
Yeah,
but still a good guy to have around. Worst case scenario, you know, I mean, a good guy to have as a pinch hitter. Because you can just draw a walk.
Another one of those could be a good fourth outfielder, but we're starting him anyway. Please, no. I don't want that again.
Well, I mean, I guess, like, how do you project this guy, though? You know what I mean? Yeah. Because it's like, again, he does not hit the ball hard. We were just talking about the fact that, like, as long as you can hit the ball hard, a guy like Framil Reyes, like, he strikes out a billion times. But then if he's hitting the ball hard, we trust him. If you're hitting the ball, again, like one of the worst hitters in baseball at hitting the ball, what, second percentile average exit velocity, 13th percentile average, 4% hard hit rate, 14th percentile expected slugging, 11th percentile barrel percentage. But he never strikes out. He never whiffs. He never strikes out. He walks constantly. He never chases. He decent speed. I don't know. Bad defender, apparently. 22nd percentile. I'm not sitting here and poo-pooing it. It's just work in progress. We'll get there. And yeah. It's the process of getting there. It's us reminding ourselves over and over that despite the fact this team does, in fact, have a positive run differential, which I completely forgot about. Check today. It's like 9 runs, but it's still something. Despite still the problems. Fact that by Pythagorean, win loss, they have a winning record. They've just been very unlucky. They're 19-18 based on run differential. The team, it's not a bad team. If anything, the pitching's letting them down, which is a crazy thing to say about this team. But I don't think Kwan is really the issue. You know, offensively, I think this is just something he has to work on. And if it doesn't work out, fine. But you obviously have to get more than 125 plate appearances. So
yeah, and I definitely think like not hitting hard is obviously a thing that matters. But I also think that just the fact that he doesn't miss ever and he makes enough contact, like eventually the hits are going to fall for him too, I think, as much as like he's just making more contact, so more are going to fall, opposed to like Franmil, who's hitting fewer balls but a bajillion miles an hour, so they're still going to fall. Like, I think he's going to even out to be probably better than what he has in that stat line that Mike Petriello tweeted out. Like, you can't just say he didn't get those 5 hits because he got those 5 hits in a game. Like, we've seen him be able to do it. I think he's going to spread out hits more, and he's going to get more. He's going to get hot again, but...
Well, maybe, but, like, what if they just bring the outfield in? Because all of his hits were, like, little bloop singles, you know what I mean? He's not a line drive. Again, higher than average fly ball rate, lower than average line drive rate, higher than average ground ball rate. Fly balls and ground balls without hitting the ball hard is a bad combination.
Yeah, I also don't think he'll be the worst power hitter ever in the forever, but maybe in the lower end forever, but I think he can...
No, yeah, I mean...
I think he can hit line drives more than he is right now, eventually, I think is...
I think if you get a slugging percentage at 4, what's a stupid number? I don't know, 440, right? Like that's not a happy number by any stretch of the imagination. No,
I don't think I'll get close to that, yeah. I mean, right now it's 371, and I think that would be, if he keeps it on base as high as it is, that's perfectly fine.
Now, that would be, if he had a slugging percentage of 440, that would be right now the 4th highest on the entire team.
Right. Which, I don't think he's going to be into that, but I think he's just going to be an on base machine for forever, which I think is. Again, Andrés Giménez is something you need, and it's something that helps the championship team.
Well, guys like Straw too. You know, I think Straw I think the a batting line of what Straw posts is more in line with what we should expect out of Kwan than something like who is someone who hits the ball. Tim Anderson, I think Tim Anderson's a dream, and it's an impossible dream.
Yeah, he's not going to be Tim Anderson, but that's fine.
But maybe he will. I don't know. Tim Anderson was not that player when he was younger. Then he put some muscle on, and now he's. Now he's one of the coolest players in the history of the world. So there you go.
Yeah. So is there one more? I feel like everybody else is kind of establishing what
Owen
they
Miller.
Are. Owen Miller. That'll be
Owen
our last one.
Owen Miller. I don't know, man. Every time I'm like, maybe not. He gets a couple hits. I'm like, maybe, though. I don't know.
Like, this must be a Tito felt about all those guys over all these years who like just get enough hits to stay in the lineup forever. And now I agree with him. Like, don't take him out. He's still good.
Dude, I mean, come on. 12 doubles, 4 home runs. He's already, like, way surpassed his entire – all his counting stats except strikeouts from last year in half the plate appearances. Like, it is wild. Except for hits. That's the thing. Like, he has 7 less hits than he had last year. He has 4 more doubles, the same number of home runs, 1 less RBI, 2 more walks, half a number of strikeouts. I mean, again, I don't know if he's at 861 OPS guy, but his entire approach has changed. And I think that, like, everything he's doing is different.
Yeah.
I mean, more line drives, less ground balls, more fly balls. You see it in his swing. He has way more lift to his swing. He gets around on those high – the way he just obliterates high fastballs, it is – I don't want to say pornographic because that's weird. I don't watch baseball to get, you know, Randy. But it is like, yes.
But a little bit. Just a little bit.
Hate, I mean, the high fastball, how many you played MLB The Show. How many times have you swung and missed on a high fastball?
Oh, every goddamn time.
Every time. You always like, yum, give me that. Even though you're like, you're aiming the batter's eye. Yeah. Dude, I aim my batter's eye at the bottom of the zone and swing the high fastball anyway because I'm an idiot. Him just doing it just for personal, like for me personally, it's like, yeah, dude. And like, again, we're talking about a guy with 91 career games.
Yeah.
91. 300 career professional major league plate appearances. To say that this is not who he is and what he was last year is who he is, to ignore the fact that all those stories of him getting up, getting with the new, what's the hitting coach's name? Whatever.
Chris Flaherty. Yeah.
Getting with him just before the lockout kicked off. So like, these are the things you got to do to be a good player. And then him coming out and doing and performing. Like, I think that if he put a batting line of, what do you got here now? 270, 340, 480. I think that is an acceptable line considering where he is right now. Like that bakes in what he's already done, and it bakes in a bit of a drop off. But again, like, I think he's been good the last couple of games. Maybe I'm just because there's been so few games, I've been misnoticing it. But I remember the last. Actually, that's not very good. Oh shit. Oh well. Well, there goes my theory. But again, I don't know. What do you think?
No. I think he's legit. I like the new approach that he has. Is the new batting coach? Is it just a little thing? I don't know, but something about it is different. He's just fun to watch, which, again, like second base, the one game I tweeted like immediately after he had an error. But in general, he looked really smooth out there. I don't know really if he's a great defender, but he's like the anti-Jason Kipnis. He just looks like he knows what he's doing at second base.
He's so smooth. He's so athletic. Yeah. Like, it's just like he's so naturally like athletic and comfortable looking out there.
Yeah.
Jason Kipnis never... No matter as much as I love Jason Kipnis,
it was his whole brain to not look comfortable. If he looked comfortable, he wouldn't be dirtbag.
His swing was garish. I mean, everything about him was just an affront to the senses, except the numbers.
And we loved him for it.
I wish that home run had gone the right side of the foul pole, because he would have been a god forever. He'd be like, look at this big mud head. He's awful to watch, but he's a king. And now we have this. And like, again, he's 24, right?
Yeah, I mean, so many players on this team are so young, and like you can see the upside of them. Yeah,
yeah, and like again, this is not. I don't think any of us are planning on this being a competition year. I think they're competing okay. They, you know, again, they laid a big fat egg over the last two series, but they've also played. They play the good teams tough.
Yeah,
like they, I think they rise to the occasion, and then they lower themselves to the occasion a lot of times too. And I think that's just that's a thing that. I think young players tend to do a lot. One would hope that having, you know, I know we talked in the beginning of the year about the beginning of the season about, like, is this the right kind of team for a manager like Francona? Maybe it is, actually, because it's young guys who are starting to prove themselves, forcing him to keep them in the lineup. And then he can then be like, listen, you stunk today. You got to not play down to your, you know, play down to your whatever, your opponent.
Yeah, I feel like he would be the person to know what to say to the young guys who are struggling and rebounding. As long as you take the lineup decisions away from him or try to heavily influence, I think. His decisions have always felt, they feel better this year. I don't know if it's because there's no veterans he can just shove in there who aren't good, but it's felt like the lineups have made more sense. Other than Ahmed Rosario playing shortstop and Owen Miller at first base so often, a lot of what he's done has just made sense, which has been kind of nice.
And like, look at Miller, you know, obviously you look at his May line. It's not great. 203, 242, 356. That's bad. But he has a 217 batting average on balls in play. Okay. Yeah. So in April and March, or March, Jesus Christ, he hit 400, 466, 700 with a 487 bat. We all knew that was going to hold up, but this won't hold up either. So like I said, 270, 340, 480. Like, these are numbers that make sense to me. Like, if just doing the lazy, getting that BABIP up to, you know, adding 80 to all the numbers I'm looking at here. I'm like, yeah, I feel pretty good about that. This is a player that I can get behind. And with offense being as bad as it is, like, that's, we're talking about a guy with a low 800s OPS.
Yeah.
All of a sudden he has a, you know, his OPS plus is, what would that even be? You know, probably like 125. And these are the players again that you need, and young, growing, getting better.
Yeah.
We're all excited.
It's a good place to.
I'm surprisingly positive about this team, considering how they have a losing record.
I know, right? I mean, young players are fun. Watching them be good, and we've also had like one exciting player through every stretch. Like, there hasn't been a time when nobody's been good.
Yeah,
which has been a thing. As long as we have that, I feel like in past seasons, even on the good teams, there have been stretches like where Everybody looked bad and it was boring. Yeah. But yeah, there's always been somebody.
Hosey's going nuclear, and then the Miller situation, Kwan.
Josh.
I'll be honest with you, man. Oscar Mercado has given us a few.
Yeah, moments. He's had his time in the sun.
And I was like, ooh, that was a fun. Like, obviously, his batting line is trash, but like, he still has four home runs.
He's had those moments.
I feel like those four home runs were all huge home runs too.
Oh
like,
yeah.
That's what I feel. I suppose I don't know it for sure, but
yeah.
If the pitching could just catch up and do anything, like. Yeah.
I mean, isn't that always a thing with Cleveland, Matt? Their pitching is just so bad.
Always trash, man. You know,
they got to really figure out that pitching stuff.
One of these days, they'll find an actual ace. They'll find precisely one pitcher.
Just give us out of one the five that
your average team would consider an ace. Just one. Yeah, that's all.
Just one. Yeah, we're not asking for much. Yeah. On that note, Merritt, I think we'll call it this week. If you haven't already, follow us on Facebook and Twitter at Covering the Corner. Follow us on Spotify, Apple, iPod, whatever that is called, Apple Podcasts, where we listen to podcasts. Find me on Twitter at MattRLY, at Merrill Lunch, like Merrill Lunch with lunch. Nailed it.
And got Merit, a sandwich as my thing. Actually, I think I changed I even changed the big banner image to a different sandwich.
I was going
to
say, I hope you didn't change the sandwich picture. I wouldn't know who you are anymore.
I'm double sandwich. And remember, folks, use the promo code NAILS to get free downloads of the podcast.
That's the only way you get them. Otherwise, you get them.
You can just use a promo. Now, how do you enter it? Just say it. Just say it into the speaker.
Hopefully, in public. And,
yeah.
Right. In front
just
of your
stand
friends
there and go, nay. And also, bonus, if you hear someone doing that, yeah, they're a listener and you can hang out with them. I saw this idea from Black Check, but still, do it anyway.
Talk to you next week, man.
Yeah.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Most of the time, we talk about tech in terms of a handful of gigantic companies, like Google, Meta, and Apple. But some of the most interesting stuff we find online is the product of a single person.
When you're working on your own, I think there's this beauty of being able to come up with an idea and then implement it then in that moment. You don't have to have permission from someone else. There's no red tape.
In the Vergecast series, Solo Acts, we'll get to know these people, the tech they use to get stuff done, and the obstacles they face trying to compete with the giants.
Some people that I talk to and my friends are like, you know, your competitors are Zuckerberg and Musk. Like, aren't you kind of like afraid of that?
Every Monday, our friend Ashley Esqueda will be curating and hosting these interviews and sharing with us what she's learned.
I can't believe the McRib locator was originally a tornado locator.
Right.
Pretty wild.
Listen to our Solo Acts miniseries now in the Vergecast feed, anywhere you find podcasts.